How you guys doing?
I'm good.
Baruch Hashem.
I'm good. Okay. All right, so where are we up to? Okay. Yeah, we're up to something not that exciting. Take a look in...
You skipped it.
Perk. I don't like to skip. I would kind of skip this section, but maybe it would be more interesting than I expect. Take a look at Perk Yudalet Pasuk Mem Vav, which is where we're up to, I think. So Perk Yudalet Pasuk Mem Vav says as follows. End of previous story. Okay? That was the end of the war story that made up Perek Gimel and Perek Yudalad. That's over. Now, to some extent, we begin, to some extent, something new. I want you to read from Pasuk Mem Zayin through Pasuk Nun Bet. And then, after you read from Pasuk Mem Zayin through Pasuk Nun Bet, I want someone to ask me the question that one needs to ask about these five Pasukim. So take a look, read Perek Yudalad, Pasuk Mem Zayin through Nun Bet. Okay, anyone? Yeah, Tig.
It seems like Sokim Mem Tes through Nun Aleph are totally out of the blue. It doesn't seem to have much necessity in this.
Mem Tes says as follows. Vayi b'nei Sha'ul. יונתן וישבי, מלכישוע, בשם שתי בנותיו, בשם הבחירה מירה, בשם הקטנה מיכל, בשם אשת שאול, אחינום, בן אחי מעץ, בשם שר צבאו, אבינר בן נר, דוד שאול, וקיש אבי שאול, ונר אבי אבנר, בן אבי אל. His family. משפחת שאול. בית שאול, including his שר צבא. The הרכב הממלכתי. There is the group that surrounded the king on a regular basis. And certainly, it is of some interest. What's this doing here? If we take this a bit further. If we point out even before that, right? Go back to pasuk Mem Zayin, right? V'shalal kada melucha al Yisrael. Shaul unified the melucha Yisrael. Ve'ilachem saviv becholiva b'moav u'bnei Amon u'be'adom malkitzova v'ofishtim b'chol sheyifnei Yashia. Ve'yascha ve'yachet Amalek ve'etilt Yisrael mi'ashoseyo. Here, this chronicle of Milchamot Shaul, right? There was all the wars that Shaul fought. It was Plishtim, after unified the Melucha, Moab, Mem Zayin. Mishal Akadam Melucha Yisrael Ve'ilachem Saviv B'chol Evav B'Moav, B'nei Amon, Edom, Malkitzova, Plishtim, B'chol Sheifnei Yashia, anyone who turned against them, right? Vaya'as Chaya Vayachat Amalek, even Amalek. So all these wars that Shaul fought. So Mem Zayin Mem Chet, we have the history of the wars of Shaul. Mem Tet through Nun Aleph, we have the Mishpacha of Shaul, or the Herkev HaMamlachti, the kingly assemblage of Shaul, family, children, Sartzava, etc. And Nun Bet, Vatiya Melchama Chazakal Plishtim Kol Yimei Shaul. And the war was strong against the Plishtim all the days of Shaul. V'ra'o Shaul Kol Ish Gibar V'chol Ben Chayo V'asfeu Alav. So every strong person, Shaul gathered him to him to fight in his army, to fight in his battles. So Taik's point is that Mem Tet through Nun Bet, the mention of the family or the cave of Shaul, the assembly of Shaul, is strange. It doesn't fit here. Because apparently, this is about the wars. So, you know, is the war pasuk Nun Bet, Vatiya Melchama Chazaka al Plishtim Kol Yimei Shaul, V'ra Shaul Kolish Gibor V'Kol Ben Chayav Yasfei Olav. That makes sense as a kind of a continuation of Memchet. V'yascha V'achat Amalek V'yatzel Yisrael Mi'an Shoseu, because the topic is war. So since the topic is war, you'd expect Nun Bet to continue on after Memchet, and Mem Tet through Nun Aleph are kind of stuck in here in a strange way. That's a kind of a good point. I don't really know. It could be. I might raise a larger question of placement. Not so much the placement of Pasuk Mem Vav and Mem Zion, which are kind of stuck here in the middle of the story of the wars of Shaul. But the, what does this sound like? What do these five Pesukim sound like? Just in general, anyone?
Obituary.
What?
Conclusion.
Obituary. Yeah. Conclusion. Right. Good. I would call this the Chronicles of Shaul, right? In other words, oh, he fought all these wars, and this was his family, and this was his and this was his Sar Tzava. And you know what? A specific mention that of all the things that were important to know about Shaul, and here's the last Pasuk. He fought really hard against the Plishtim all his life, and he gathered all the strong men of Israel to fight against the Plishtim. So rather than look at this as, oh, there's something stuck in about the family in the middle of the wars of Shaul, I'll look at this as a kind of larger three-part, the Chronicles of Shaul. Part one, the general fact he fought all these battles. Part two, the family and the Herkev Mamlachti. And part three, the specific mention of the war against the Plishtim that was central during Shaul's time. Now, however, realizing that we're dealing here with like the Chronicles of Shaul, so to speak, that exactly raises the question I assume all of you are kind of thinking. What is this doing here? In terms of the placement of these five psukim, it sounds like it should come at the end of the life of Shaul. And I don't think we've really reached the end of the story of Shaul. So I think the big question or the issue to deal with here structurally is why exactly is it here where it is? I think that's a kind of important and interesting question. Yeah, Josh.
I think it's trying to give the message that at this point, after we've already been seeing the decline of Shaul for so long, at this point, we're basically saying, okay, Shaul's done, and now we're going to move on to David. Like, even though it seems like Shaul is kind of continuing from here, he's not really, like, in control anymore. He's kind of just, he's done. Like,
okay, good. I think this is one excellent answer. I would like to phrase it a little bit differently. I mean, one answer is that, the question is, we haven't yet reached the end of the story of Shaul. So if we haven't yet reached the end of the story of Shaul, what is this doing here? So maybe the answer is that Josh is correct. In some ways, we have reached the end of the story of Shaul. Take a look at Perik Yud Gimel, Pasuk Gimel. I go back there in the middle of the long war story. Yud Gimel, says as follows. Vayomer Shmuel el Shaul, niskalta, you failed. Lo shamart et mitzvat Hashem elkech asher tzivcha, ki ata ichin Hashem et mamlachta Yisrael. God had prepared your melucha for Yisrael, Adolam forever. Vata mamlachta lo takom, your kingdom will not be established. Bikesh Hashem lo ish kilvavo, God demanded or required or requested someone like his heart. Veitzaveh Hashem v'nagid alamo ki lo shamart et asher tzivcha Hashem. God is going to choose someone else. Meaning, Perek Yud Gimel, Perek Yud Daled, the war story against the Plishtim is in some sense the story of the end of the Melucha of Shaul. Because in that story, in Pasuk Yud Gimel and Pasuk Yud Daled, Shmuel is gozer alav mamlachtcha lo takum. So maybe Shaul has reached the end of his reign. So if Shaul has reached the end of his reign, therefore that explains why in the aftermath of the war story, we get the chronicle of Shaul from Pasuk Mem Zayin through Nun Bet, simply because this really is the end of, effectively, de facto, this is the end of the story of Shaul. He's already lost the Melucha. It's time to move on to David. So we get the chronicle of Shaul stuck in here as a kind of a bookend that really ends the real life of Shaul. That's one possible approach. Nice idea, Josh. Yeah, Mayor.
I was going to disagree with that.
You can disagree or add something else. Say what you want to say.
It should be one parak later.
It should be one parak later. Why?
Because the next story is also a
show. Yafem Ode, because David is not found until Perek Tet Zion. Take a look in Perek Tet Zion. Right? Take a look. Hold on. Everybody look at the beginning of the Perek Tet Zion, Pasuk Aleph. Vayom Hashem el Shmuel, ad matay ata mitabel el Shaul, vani ma'astiv mimelocha Yisrael, malei karnecha shemen, velech eshlachacha el Yishai beit halachmi. It's Perek Tet Zion, Pasuk Aleph is the beginning, or the nitzotzot, the beginning of the rise of the David story, right? Shaul's finished. Shmuel, why be mitabel el Shaul? He's done. Go anoint this other fellow. So Meir's point is that, wait a second, if this was correct, then we would expect Perek Tet Zion to come right after the Chronicles of Shaul, and Perek Tet Vav is out of place. It's another Shaul-only story. It's the story of Shaul and Amalek. So why are we getting the Chronicles of Shaul before the real end of Shaul? Meaning the real end of Shaul is after Perek Tet Vav. So if the real end of Shaul is after Perek Tet Vav, the Chronicles should be after Perek Tet Vav as opposed to the reversed. First we get A, the Chronicles, and then B, the story of Perek Tet Vav, the war against Amalek, and then Tet Zion, the beginnings of the rise of David. So if Josh's theory is correct, it should kind of be the reverse. A and B should be flipped. First you should get A, the story of the war against Amalek, and then B, the Chronicles of Shaul. So that's a good question. I don't know. What do you want to say? Keep talking.
I was going to add that it seems like Gimli, Dal, Tet Vav, all one block of stories of Shaul's failure. So even if you're going to argue that Shaul's failure represents David's rise or something like that, so still, don't break up the block. Either put it
Okay, your claim is, to state it succinctly, Josh's theory is indefensible because we haven't yet reached the end of the story of Shaul, and if we haven't yet reached the end of the story of Shaul, right, the Chronicles of Shaul should not be here. Okay. Good question. What? What's your alternative theory?
It only works really for the last pasuk that maybe the reason that they're mentioning here that they fought with a Plishtim throughout all of Shaul's life is to highlight the fact that the failure in the previous parak was that they didn't chase the Plishtim. They could have, if they hadn't had this whole mess up with the Yonatan, they could have chased the Plishtim down and wiped them out and eliminated the Plishtim as an enemy, but instead, as a result of that failure, throughout all of Shaul's life, there's this bitter war with the Plishtim, and that becomes his entire life goal and life focus because he messed up here or something like that.
Oh, fascinating! That's a fascinating idea. In other words, Meir's claim.
I have no idea.
The second possibility is as follows: that maybe it's only because of the last pasuk of the Chronicles of Shaul, the mention of the non-ending or the unending war against the Plishtim, that this is found here as a proper sikum to Perek Yud-Gimel and Perek Yud-Dalet. Remember, Perek Yud-Gimel and Perek Yud-Dalet is the story of the pursuit of the Plishtim after the massive victory against them. But at some point, the pursuit against the Plishtim turns into the pursuit of who? Yonatan. And when the pursuit against the Plishtim turns into the pursuit against Yonatan, the Plishtim somehow seem to sneak away or disappear. So maybe it's pointing out here as an end to that. If Shaul had his priorities correct, he wouldn't have been stuck in this unending war against the Plishtim forever. Which that could be a second theory as to why this is here, as a kind of sikum for Perek Gimel and Perek Yud-Dalet, and a backhanded critique of Shaul again. Maybe. Josh.
How about I adjust my theory?
If you want to adjust your theory, okay.
It seems like this whole obituary section is very positive towards Shaul. So it's possible that up until now, notwithstanding all of the negative things that we've seen Shaul do and the kind of the negative connotations of Shaul's actions, his actions can be viewed in some positive light, or at least he had some positive motivation for all of his actions, which was specifically and mostly chasing down the Plishtim and trying to kill them. However, the whole thing with Amalek is that he completely fails, like miserably. There's nothing positive to say about it whatsoever.
Theory three. Take a look in the beginning of the Chronicles of Shaul, the very first pasuk. Pasuk Mem Zion says as follows: V'Shaul lachad hamlucha al Yisrael. וילחם סביב בכל אויביו ומואב ובני עמון ובאדום ומלכי צוב ופלשתים ובכל אשר יפנה יושיע. This is incredibly positive, as Josh pointed out. In other words, Shaul fought against all the enemies of Am Yisrael, and the phrase, even before he fights against all the enemies, how did he do it? Or what did he do? Shaul lachar ha-melucha, Shaul unified the melucha. So the term here, lachar, is used as unification of the melucha, and it's symbolic of Shaul's success. The positive aspect of Shaul, he unified the kingship, he established the mamlacha, and he fought against all of Am Yisrael's enemies, misaviv, as it says, right? Etc. Now, you should remember that in the previous story of Perek Yud Gimel and Perek Yud Daled, the word lachad appeared in a very particular place, with a completely different meaning. It's the exact same word, a completely different meaning. Take a look in Perek Yud Daled, Pasuk Mem Aleph, previously, where there was the pursuit of Yonatan, which was the great distraction from the war against the Plishtim. Yudal Mem Aleph says, "Vayomer Shaul el Hashem Elokei Yisrael Hava Tamim Vayilached Yonatan v'Shaul va'am Yatzu." Or in the end of Membet, "Vayomer Shaul Apilu Beni uBen Yonatan Beni Vayilached Yonatan." It was the selection. The term is lachad, not meaning unify, but actually selection, which is the opposite of unification, right? In other words, previously the term vayilachad had been used for the picking out or the selecting out of Yonatan, the separation of Yonatan, which that's symbolic of Shaul's failures as a leader, the way we read Perek Yigimel, Perek Yudalad, in many, many different ways, right? That the pursuit against the Plishtim turns into the pursuit of Yonatan. That his kind of leadership is the incorrect type of leadership, and Yonatan's type of leadership is the correct type of leadership. The divisions between himself and Yonatan, the divisions between himself and the Am. So the vayilachad term in Perek Yigimel, Perek Yudalad is symbolic of the critique of Shaul that we engaged in. Here, the Mikra uses the exact same word to open the Chronicles of Shaul in a completely positive sense, i.e. changes the meaning completely. V'Shaul lachad ha-melucha al Yisrael v'yilachem. So the same term gets turned around. And I think this is what Josh suggested. The idea is here, it's to balance out the negative attitude we have towards Shaul. It's a corrective. It's here, right after the heavy critique of Shaul we had in Perek Yigimel, Perek Yudalad, and maybe before the war against Amalek, we get the Chronicles of Shaul to balance out and say, well, he was a good king, he unified the kingdom, he established the kingdom, and he fought against all of the enemies as necessary. So there's a positive side here. So we have here, so far, I believe, three theories on the table. Theory one, which was, in some sense, this is the end because he was stripped of the melucha. Theory two, this is part of the ongoing critique of Shaul that he shouldn't have gotten distracted as he did, and then he wouldn't have had to deal with the unending war against the Plishtim. Theory three, this is, serves as a kind of corrective over and against the critique of Shaul that we had because of the Vayilakei Lakad parallel that we talked about here. Yaakov.
Shaul didn't think that David would, David was not the classical Ishkibur, Ben Chayil and Ishkibur, yeah, that came to Shaul, but David, like, was completely different than Shaul in that he was the one who was able to defeat Goliath.
I'm not sure what that would be doing here. Why would that explain why this is here?
I'm not sure, but I think that is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Yitzi.
In response to Mary's question, over here it says,
"No, I don't want you to respond to Mary's question. If you have anything in addition to add to the reason why this is here, that would be it. But I don't want you to respond to Mary if possible.
Okay.
All right. Anyone else want to add? Rafi.
I think the last pasuk being there is kind of a hint to what's to come, in that it says that Shaul was fighting with the Plishtim all his life, and we know that the people who actually caused the end of his life are the Plishtim, and it's through the war with the Plishtim that caused him to finally end his kingship officially.
Yeah, but why is this here? It doesn't necessarily help us.
We're talking about what he accomplished in his life.
No, but the question is, why mention the accomplishments here? Bichlal, that's the problem. You might be right. You're understand right. It foreshadows the eventual end of Shaul. Okay, but why is it here? That's still, I think, a bit unclear. Yeah, Ari.
So we're trying to say that the main reason why he was stripped of his kingship was because of what happens in Parakhet Bav. That if he didn't have this sincerity, you would have thought that there's an accumulation of all the things that we criticize him for. by inserting this here, the edited Dal says, look, despite all of the critique that were giving him after all his actions, he was still disciplined enough to dethrone him, and he still was a good king. It's not until the complete rejection of the command of Shmuel through God in Ketubah that's when he's actually dethroned.
That's interesting. Okay, hold on to that. I kind of agree. I think there's a fourth possibility here I'd like to suggest. All these, I think, by the way, everything we've suggested, not everything can coexist with everything else, but these are different ideas. There's another possibility. The common denominator of everything we've looked at is that they're all going backwards. Maybe you guys are onto something here, we have to go forwards. Maybe that's what Ari's pointing out. Let me explain what I mean by that. Take a look at the beginning of Perek Tedvav, which is what we're supposed to do today anyway. So let's take a look at Perek Tedvav. Pasuk Bet, okay? Perek Tedvav, Pasuk Bet says as follows. Kol Mar Hashem Tzvakot. Shmuel speaks to Shaul. Kol Mar Hashem Tzvakot. Pakadati et asher asa amalek l'Yisrael. Asher samlo baderech balotomi mitzrayim. Ata leich vikita et amalek v'achiramtem et kol ha'shalo. V'lo tachmal alav. Don't spare anybody. V'heimata mi'ish ad isha. Man, women, me'olel v'ad yonek, mishor v'ad sem, gamal v'ad chamar. Kill everybody, right? Absolute. Strike Amalek. Destroy them completely and utterly is the command here. Now, it's interesting, though, you guys should have picked up on it, that the language here closely echoes Dvarim Perek Kaf Hei, right? What do I mean? Go back to Dvarim Perek Kaf Hei, the end of Parshat Ki Tetzei. Take a look at Dvarim Perek Kaf Hei, which says as follows. Okay, let's read Kafei Yud Zayin. Kafei Yud Zayin says as follows. Zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek baderech b'tzeitcha mimitzrayim. Zachor, that's, what does Hashem say here? This is after Rav Shabbat Zachor? Yeah, okay, well, there's a reason for that, right? Take a look. Tetvav bet. Kol ma Hashem tzvakot pakadati. What does the word pakadati mean? Remembered. Zachor, pakadati, zachor. That's one connection. Going on, et asher asa amalek. Go back to Perek Kaf Hei. Et asher asa lecha amalek. That's a second parallel. Reading in both places. Asher samlo baderech balotomi mitzrayim. Connection 3, the term baderech. Connection 4, the term mitzrayim. Going back to Kaf Hei yudchet. Kaf Hei yudzayin. Zachar asher asa lecha amalek. Baderech b'tzeitcha mimitzrayim. Okay? All right, it's almost word for word, and then these four connections between the two parshiot. Connection 1, the pakot zachar term. 2, asher asa lecha amalek. 3, the baderech. 4, the mitzrayim in both cases. Now, by the way, of course, what is commanded back in Dvarim? Take a look in Dvarim Perek Kafe, pasuk yud tet. And the pasuk says as follows. V'yabaniach Hashem Elokecha lecha mikol yevecha misaviv, ba'aretz asher Hashem Elokecha noten lecha nachala l'rishta, timche et zecher Amalek mitachat hashamayim lo tishkach. So what is this command, timche et zecher Amalek? What does that mean? Erase. You get out your little eraser from your kalmar. You start erasing, right? Or you blot them out. What does timche mean?
Destroy. Utterly destroy.
Absolute, utter destruction, right? Go back to Sefer Shmuel. Let's take a look at the command here in Sefer Shmuel. Kol Hashem Tzvakot Pakadati da-da-da-da-da. Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Gimel. Atalech v'ikitet Amalek v'hacharamtem et kol ha-shalo. Destroy everything they have. V'lo tachmol olav. Do not spare anything. V'imata me'ish ad isha me'olel v'ad yonek mishor v'ad zeh migamol v'ad chamor. What is that? That's Timche et Zecher Amalek mitachat Hashemayim. Those are the halachic parameters that Shmuel gives Shaul to accomplish the tzivui of Timche et Zecher Amalek mitachat Hashemayim. Now, in other words, there are two very crucial connections between the parsha here in Sefer Shmuel, Perek Tetvav, and of course the original command back in Dvarim Perek Kafe. Connection one is the linguistic connection. The Zachor Pakod, the Asher Asalach HaMalek, the Derach, the Mitzrayim, etc. That's connection one. But the second important connection is the cause and effect connection. Or the because of the historical sins of Amalek, there is a mitzvah to wipe them out. And that's the thematic structure of both parshiot, right? Because I remember what they did, but Baderach Vatzeit Chami Mitzrayim, therefore go wipe them out utterly is what happens here in Sefer Shmuel, which is exactly, of course, parallel to what was set up in Dvarim Perek Kafei. So these two connections. Now, here's the thing. Back in Dvarim, when is mitzvat Amalek supposed to take place? When is the milchama against Amalek supposed to take place? Go back to Dvarim Perek Kafei Pasuk Yutet, right? How does it begin? Anyone remember? What's the timing of it? The timing. Vaya baniach Hashem Elokecha lecha mikol aivecha misadiv ba'aretz. So when you're in the Aretz and you have rest, mikol evecha misaviv, that's when there's the mitzvah of Mechiyat Amalek. Now go back to the Chronicles of Shaul, that section we're discussing, and take a look at Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Mem Zayin, which is the very first Pasuk of the quote-unquote Chronicles of Shaul. V'Shaul lachad hamlucha a Yisrael, v'yilachem saviv b'chol evav. In other words, what does Shaul do? He fights Saviv Michalavav against all the enemies around. Enemies around. It's exactly like back in Dvarim Perek Kafe. There it's Evecha Misaviv. And here it's Vayilachem Saviv Michal Evav. In other words, what the Chronicles of Shaul do is they create the perfect timing and the perfect introduction for what? For Perek Tetvav. The story of the war against Amalek, the accomplishment of the Dvarim Perek Kafe. In other words, it's only after we, so to speak, hear the story of the Chronicles of Shaul, that Shaul fought all these wars against all the enemies of Am Yisrael Misaviv, that's the right time to tell the story, or for the story of Mechiyat Mitzvat Amalek to take place, or Mitzvat Mechiyat Amalek to take place, because that's what was set up in Dvarim Perek Kafe. So in other words, I'm not saying that the war against Amalek happened after the Chronicles of Shaul. But what I am saying is that it has to be presented that way. Because that's the right time, that's the way it's supposed to happen in Dvarim Perek Kafei.
Presumably it's Pasuk Memchet.
What?
Presumably when Pasuk Memchet says Vayachar Amalek, that's referring to the story.
Yes, right, I agree. In other words, and that's what all the Parshanim point out, that Perek Tetvav is the klal, is the pratim of the klal v'achat Amalek. Perek Pasuk Memchad v'achat Amalek is the klal, and Perek Tetvav is the pratim, and it follows immediately after, or is part of fighting against all the oivav misaviv. Okay, so I think this is another reason to explain why the placement of the Parsha is here, because it sets the scene thematically and conceptually for the next story for Perek Tetvav, the war against Amalek. This is a different way of approaching it, and this is another explanation. So to sum up, we have four different ideas that we discussed here regarding the placement of Pasuk Mem Bet through Pasuk Mem Zayin, or whatever it was, the Chronicles of Shaul. One, this is really the end of Shaul's life. Two, it's perhaps part of the critique of Shaul in some way by saying he's engaged in endless war against the Plishtim now. Three, Josh, they'd be like, very much this is like a positive, a balancing out of Shaul's image or character, that even though he had done, we critiqued him sharply, he did a lot of good by unifying the Melucha and fighting these wars. And four, we pointed out here, kind of fits with, as an introduction to the story of Milchamet Amalek in Perek Tetvav. Yeah, Yossi.
So, like, I still don't understand exactly what this piece here, Ty went on the beginning, Mem Tet to Nun Bet.
I don't think it's really separate. I think it's just part of the general story of the end of the life of Shaul, where we recount who his family was and what the Arkeva of his Mishpacha was and the like.
Because the thing is, what's interesting though, in the end, it talks about his generals. Which
yeah.
Makes sense to the context.
No, I think, again, it's a general discussion of what Shaul's life was, who he was, who he hung out with. Family, generals, it's all, it's not necessarily per se only about war. It's mostly about war, but it's not only about war.
Because I'm saying, if that's true, it's still a very short.
But it's sufficient in terms of this, yeah. Okay.
Like it doesn't list his cap, I mean, it doesn't list his officers, it doesn't list his. List
but
his,
it's enough.
In other places for David, it'll list his tax, the guy who collects his taxes, it'll list. I think it's not.
Okay. Okay. Let's go on. I wanna go on to Perek Tetvav. Next section. We should be able to start that today. We already did a little bit. Perek Tetvav is of course the war against Amalek. It's a long perek. Why don't you guys do the following? when you read from Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Aleph, through, read the whole thing, through Lamed Hei. It's long. We're not going to discuss the whole thing today. But while you're reading it, you can especially concentrate on Tetvav, Aleph through Tetvav. The first 15 Pesukim, Aleph through Tetvav, we will discuss now. But it's also worthwhile to continue on reading all the way until Lamed Hei and take a few minutes to do that to refresh your memories, and then we will begin our discussion. Okay. Anything to say? You guys all had some time to take a good nap now. Rest. Okay. What do you got? Anyone? Questions? Comments? Reading of the text in some interesting way. Division into sections. Key words. Brilliant Kedushim. I could just talk the whole time, but unless you guys want to comment. Yeah, Avi.
What is Shaul's chet and why can't it be fixed?
Good question. You know, Bar Benel asked that question. Anybody have like a computer with Bar Ilan on it?
No.
No? I meant to bring a copy of Bar Benel. I picked it up to leave my house with it, but it was too heavy for me to carry here. And then I meant to go to the library to get the copy out, but then... that's Avraham Avinu's question.
Seems pretty obvious what the chet is.
Yeah. It's incredibly obvious what the chet is, but it's still Avraham Avinu's question. Let me explain Avraham Avinu's question. I wish I could quote it. You can get it? Good. So get the Avraham Avinu. It's Perek Tetov of Sefer Shmuel. He has those shelot beforehand. It's like Hashela Hashlishit or something like that. And you'll read it out loud to us. But before we get to Avraham Avinu's formulation, right? Now, take a look at this fascinating pasuk. Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Well, I can't resist. So before I get to Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Yud Aleph comes after Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Yud, strikingly enough. Now, what should be very clear is that Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Yud is a turn in the action. Now, how do we know that Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Yud is a turn in the action? As follows, let's read it. Vayhi Dvar Hashem El Shmuel Leimor. And God spoke to Shmuel as saying, now, previously, God was not in the Perek. He was, but not explicitly, right? Suddenly Hashem speaks to Shmuel in Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Yud. Now, previously, all you'd had was that Shmuel spoke in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Going back to Tetvav Bet said, Ko amar Hashem tzvakot pakat di esh asher shasa malek li Yisrael. So Shmuel says, so says God. But God speaking only first happens in Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Yud, Vayi Dvar Hashem El Shmuel Lemor. Now, what does God say in Tetvav Yud Aleph? Nichamti kim lachti et Shaul lemelech ki shav me'acharai vet dvarai lohikim. I regret that I made Shaul melech because he's turned from behind me or turned away from me. Vet dvarai lohikim. Veichar l'Shmuel. Shmuel was very upset. Veyizak el Hashem kol ha'layla. Shmuel prayed to God all night. What was God's response? Nothing, right? Apparently God didn't give in to whatever Shmuel cried about all night. So Pasuk Yud Bet is another turn. Vayashkem Shmuel. Vayashkem is when, by the way? Is the morning, okay? As opposed to the Laila. So we realize there's a turn in between Yud Aleph and Yud Bet, the switch from the scene of Laila to the scene of Vayashkem, obviously Boker. So the entire mini-segment, call it the dialogue between God and Shmuel, call it Gzerat HaKadosh Baruch Hu, call it Tfilat Shmuel, call it the nightly interlude, this kind of interlude of what happened at night, right? It lasts two psukim, right? Yud and Yud Aleph. Now, what's striking about what happens in these two psukim in the segment of Gzerat HaKadosh Baruch Hu or Tfilat Shmuel is the phrase that Hashem uses. Hashem uses the phrase, what's the phrase? What does God say about himself? Nichamti. Hey, can anyone remember anywhere in the Chumash or any previously with the idea of Nichamti, God regretting something happens? Something like what? Noach? What? Parshat Noach. That would be Bereshit Perek. What? That's later on. That's Shmot. Right. Take a look in Bereshit Perek Vav. Take a look in Bereshit Perek Vav Pasuk. Hold on a second. Perek Vav Pasuk Vav is what I want. Wait just a second. Okay. Perek Vav Pasuk He even. Let's go back to Shmuel to Bereshit Perek Vav Pasuk He. Let's look at the context there. Okay. Bereshit Perek Vav Pasuk He says as follows. Sorry. Okay. God saw that the evil of man was very great upon the earth. So God saw that the evil of man was very great, and all the intentions of the thoughts of his heart were rak ra. These are two pretty heavy lines. Rabba ra'ata adam ba'aretz, and the second heavy line, yetzer machshavot libo rak ra kol hayom, only evil, no good, zero good. It's 100% evil, 100% ra, and 0% good in man. In terms of the tov ra question, right? Next pasuk vav. Vayinachem Hashem ki asat adam ba'aretz ve'etatzev al libo. What is it that sparks the vayinachem Hashem, the regret of Hashem? It's the rabba ra'at adam and rak ra kol hayom. It's fascinating here when you come here to Shmuel Perek, Shmuel Aleph Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Yud Aleph, nichamti ki imlachti et Shaul lamelech. And the echo of the regret of HaKadosh Baruch Hu about having done something, where over there it's rak ra or rabba ra'at adam, and it doesn't at all seem comparable. Yes, Shaul didn't listen. He did something wrong, but what exactly did Shaul do wrong that caused him to be stripped of the melucha, and that God regrets it in the deep sense, and the Navi prays all night. And what response does the Navi get? Does Shmuel get when he is mitpal kol alayla? No response. In other words, the fact that God says Nichamti and the echoes of Nichamti, plus the fact that Shmuel is Zoe Kol HaLayla and it accomplishes absolutely nothing, and God doesn't even deign to respond to Shmuel, shows that this is Nigmar. There's nothing to discuss. Ein Amal Daber. And I think this does say Darshani. The question is, what exactly has Shaul done so wrong so that A, he's stripped of the melucha, B, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says Nichamti, C, that Shmuel's prayers are ineffective, D, that there isn't even a conversation about it, right? So I do think that Avi's question is a very, very good question. It needs to be worked out in Perek Tet Vav, and I agree. Now, the formation of a Barbanel, do you have it?
I have it on a PDF, so it's really hard to read it. The Barilam doesn't have it. I can try. Should I read it?
Barilam doesn't have it?
Yes. Hashela Revi'it, Ba'onesh Sha'ul Hamuflag, the extreme onesh, Shne'enash Al-Chit Katan, as a small sin. Vu Amru, Ya'an Ma'asta et Dvar Hashem, Ve'imasacha Hashem Himelech. That's Pasuk Kaf Bet. Everybody take a look at Pasuk Kaf Bet? Right? Pasuk Kaf Bet should say, I think it's Kaf Bet, right? Ya'an Ma'asta, And Rabbi Nachman continues on. V'achet azeh ya katan ma'od. It's a very small chet. Achreishin milcham milchamot Hashem. V'asan milchamet Amalek kmo shetziva. He did the war against Amalek. V'av shalakach me'ashalal. Okay, he took a little bit of the stuff. Lo haya oto avon ra'uli la'onesh muflag kazeh. That small sin was not suited for this gigantic punishment. Sheim asu Hashem imalach l'Yisrael. והנה מצינו שדוד הרק את אוריה בחרב בני אמון וישכב את אשתו, והוא היה אבון פלילי, ולא קרא שם את מלכותו מעליו. In other words, Barbanel asked the question in two ways. One, objectively, it's just a small chet, it's a chet katan, given the fact that fundamentally Shaul did accomplish the command of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when he did the milchama against Amalek. So objectively speaking, it's a small and tiny chet. But Barbanel adds to that, contextually, not just objectively, but in comparison to the chet of David, it seems like zutot ba'alma. What's the sin of David? David murdered this guy and slept with his wife, and God didn't say, Yan Ma'asat Dvar Hashem and ripped the malchut from him. So it all seems completely unfair. And later on in the piece, in the last line, I'll read you this. Abarbanel accuses God of discrimination, of playing favors. And then he says at the end, after asking the question, after the avon pli, which means a criminal offense in modern Hebrew of David, he says, "Ha'im haya maso panim badavar." That means maso panim means to turn your face like discrimination, like corruption of a judge, or that kind of thing, right? So, is there some sort of strange discrimination that God carries out in favor of David against Shaul here? That's how pressing the Abravanel considers the question. Okay, so there's many different ways to phrase the question. You can phrase it in terms of textually, as we did, the extreme nichamti,
the tzaka of Shmuel all night not making a difference, the lack of conversation, the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu simply nigmar with Shaul, or you could phrase it as Abarbanel did, looking at the chait objectively after all he fundamentally did do the war, or looking at it contextually vis-a-vis the chait of David, it seems like nothing. But the real question is, again, what did Shaul do that was wrong, that this was the reaction of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Yeah, Rafi. That's question one. Okay, I don't want you all to answer. You can all answer, you can say your answers, but it's going to take me a long time to actually say what I think. So, but I'm willing to listen to all comments. Yeah, Rafi.
So, not so much an answer, just another thing I noticed.
Good.
When talking about the 200,000 soldiers, it mentions specifically 10,000 from Yehuda. And I think that's the that's telling us that Yehuda, who, if you look at the Brachos, is supposed to be king usually. And now that someone from Binyamin is king, they're still supporting him, and that's showing that Shaul has the whole nation behind him, and he has a chance to do something as a nation together, to take out Amalek, and he goes through with it, and he blows it. And then we see that it takes David almost his entire kingship to be able to reunite the entire nation together.
Okay, I hear you. I mean, he's got everybody behind him, and that's good. That shows you that he's a good king. He's got even the Aser Elefim Anshei Yehuda. He's got 200,000 warriors for this battle of extermination against Amalek. That's a good force. You know, it's really interesting also, if you'd follow the geography here, he had to go very far down south. If you look, they do maps of these things. Don't forget, they're located on the Gavahar, Binyamin, Yehuda. They go all the way down south, chase down into the deep heart of the Negev, down into Sinai, actually. And he takes this gigantic force quite far. So it's a very impressive feat of leadership. And then they go back to the Gilgal. And as opposed to like in the past where Shaul had this problem of people melting away from him and disappearing on him, and he had so few warriors. He used to have like 600 guys, maybe 3,000 at his best moments. He's got like 210,000 guys, and he's got them, you know, chasing all over the place. This is a really powerful and important melech, right? And he's really got his stuff together, right? Rafi's right. So it's very interesting, and it's almost ironic that at the high point of Shaul's career as a melech or a lochem, he loses it all. That's what needs to be thought about. Yeah, Ty.
I have two linguistic points that I just noticed, both about the word or the root shema.
Good.
So obviously,
that's really good.
It's a key word in the parak. It appears seven times.
It appears seven times. It actually does. That's correct.
So that's the first point. But the second point is that the very strange usage of the word vayishma in its first appearance in pasuk Dalid is a foreshadowing or some kind of significance with the last appearance of the root in pasuk Chaf Dalid. It says Vayishma Shaul et ha'am, and meaning he gathered them together, and then when Shaul admits his chait finally, in Chaf Dalet, it says Aki ra'iti et ha'am, the same usage of the Amuk. I feared the Am Vayishma b'kolam, and I listened to them.
This is all incredibly important. Meaning this is one of these prakim where the methodological key to unlocking the perak is what's called the Milat Manche. The key word. There are actually three phrases that each one of them appears seven times throughout the entire parak. There are only three terms that each appear seven times, and they happen to be three terms that are key for the basic thematic understanding of the parak. Taig is right. One of them is Shema. Actually, more accurately, it's actually Shema Lekol is the one that appears seven times, and the V'yishama is the eighth time. It's a kind of pun. But even so, let's just look at the three that Taig noticed, just as kind of a preface here. You noticed two, but you should notice the third. Let's take a look at Perek Tet Vav Pasuk Aleph. Okay. Vayomer Shmuel el Shaul, Oti shalach Hashem limshachacha lamelech al amo v'al Yisrael. So Shmuel said to Shaul, God sent me to anoint you as a melech on amo Yisrael v'ata Shema lekol divrei Hashem. In other words, what this is all about from the get-go, Shema lekol divrei Hashem. That's how the parak begins, right? This is the introductory pasuk. Shmuel says, God sent me to anoint you as king on his people, on Yisrael, and now, v'ata, and now, that's strange, v'ata, and now. Now as opposed to when? Is that interesting?
He conquered all the lands.
Yeah, but it's strange. Why does he need the word vata? Right? Why is that word vata tucked in there? It's kind of a strange word. And now, it's strange.
No, but it says with Zecher Amalek in Dvarim, it says when you you made the connection before, when you've conquered all
I know, but so you're saying the ata refers back to the Chronicles of Shaul, and now you've conquered everything else, but not in this pasuk. Maybe. I don't know, but what is very clear, going back to Taig's point, is that from the very beginning here, ata shma l'kol divrei Hashem. Now, he pointed out there's a second time that the word Shema, or some variation of it, seems to appear in Pasuk Dalet. Vayishama Sha'ul et ha'am. Now, that means one of two things, Vayishama Sha'ul et ha'am. Either he made it heard to the Am, or he proclaimed to the Am, or he gathered the Am. But it's really interesting that in Pasuk Dalet, the word Vayishama goes back to Vatashma l'kol divrei Hashem. I think that's pretty interesting in terms of the pun. And Taig is also right. At the last time that the word Shema appears in the Perek, it seems to be connected up to that first time for certain. Pasuk Kaf Dalet. When Shaul finally admits his chet, Vayomer Shaul el Shmuel, Chatati ki avarti et pi Hashem v'torecha, ki yareti et ha'am v'eshma b'kolam. And here it's Shema b'kolam. Okay? So there's something very interesting going on with the Shema b'kolam language. Now, by the way, can I just point out to the funniest one of the Shema b'kol? The second time Shema b'kol appears is in Pasuk Yudalet. Okay? Take a look at Pasuk Yudalet. When Shmuel confronts Shaul. Vayomer Shmuel, Uma kol hatzon hazeh ba'aznai. What is the sound, the voice of the sheep in my ears? V'kol ha'bakar, and the sound of the cattle. Asher anochi shomea, that I'm hearing. So Shmuel says, ani shomea et ha'kol of the tzon and the bakar. So the shmiat kol of the tzon and the bakar is certainly connected up to the shmiat kol of Divrei Hashem in Perek Tetzaveh Pasuk Aleph, and the eshma b'kolam, listening to the people in Pasuk Kaf Dalet when Shaul confesses. In other words, what we figured out here, even before counting that Shema B'kol appears seven times in the Perek, and next time I'll do that, it's clear that this issue of whose kol you're listening to is a clear dynamic or axis in the Perek. There are three possibilities as to whose kol you could be listening to here in the Perek. You could be listening to the kol Dvar Hashem, as Shmuel states in Perek Tetzaveh Pasuk Aleph. That's possibility one. What else? What other kol could you be listening to? The tone of the bakar. The tone of the bakar in Pasuk Yudalet, that Shmuel says, I'm hearing this kol of tone of bakar, right? Or possibility three, what Shaul claims he did, that he was Shomea B'kol Ha'am in Pasuk Kaf Dalet. So there's this very interesting triangle or dynamic set up between Shmiat Kol Hashem, Shmiat Kol Tzonu Bakar, and Shmiat Kol Ha'am, right? And that's got to be worked out here in the Perek. I will add that to a second question that we raised. In other words, one, what is the severity of the Chet of Shaul, why he's punished so severely? Two, how to work out this literary feature of Shmiat Kol Hashem, cattle, etc. Good. Yitzi.
I thought that possibly the sin here is that he fails to wipe out the concept of Amalek. And Amalek, that at this point in time, he, as Rafi said, he has every opportunity. He has a 200,000 man army. Yet he kills all the men. He leaves Agag over and leaves the sheep over, seemingly to bring carbonos and maybe even slaughter Agag in a grand ceremony. However, he doesn't do it. Is like, I guess, as quickly and as necessary as he should have, and maybe, I guess, to the other nations of the world, it may appear that maybe Bnei Israel is a little hesitant, and Amalek is this nation who, they're pirates, more or less, and they feast on the weak, as we see, They
feast on the weak. This is a good phrase.
As they did to Bnei Israel when they left Egypt. And
they're pirates and cannibals.
Yes, exactly.
So therefore, you can't demonstrate weakness against these marauders.
And you have to wipe it out, them out. And
this is the chet of Shaul.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I don't disagree. I mean, but in other words, the problem is that you must show no mercy to evil, and Shaul is weak against evil. This is your claim?
In addition, though, is that...
Now, I'm not saying this is wrong. And I'm saying what you're saying is rooted, it's certainly rooted in the comments of Rashi and Chazal in general. Amalek is representative of evil, and you can't demonstrate this, like, even the little children and the babies and the cattle and their sheep. Everything is evil about them, and you can't show any weakness or hesitation in confronting and wiping out evil. And that is the Chet of Shaul, that he fails to stand up to evil as necessary. Okay, now I'll just point out that if that's right, if that's correct, then
that wouldn't show weakness to the rest of the nations, though.
I don't know. I have to think about that a little bit. Okay, I would like you to prove to me in any shape or form whatsoever, though, from the Perek, that's implied in some way by the Perek. Okay, I'm familiar with the idea. I'm not so sure that it has to do with weakness in the face of evil. I'll take two more comments and then I will sum up and then we will end for today. All right.
I guess he's had a problem is that he's like passively conferring a magical autonomy to a human king. In fact, they're making this distinction between all the general public are killed, but there's something special about a human king. It's like it's having a misunderstanding of what the role of a king is, and the only reason why Shaul is special is because he represents the divine will, but Amalek doesn't represent the divine will. So I'm not sure I'm thinking why you treat him differently than the rest of the Am, and he's not special. He's not more special than this because he's the king. And the only reason why a king would be special is if he's fulfilling the divine will.
Okay, we're gonna end with that. No. And I will raise that as a third question based upon a comment of Dat Mikra here. Right. Dat Mikra points out that this parak has to be about what Melucha is all about. In other words, if Shaul is stripped from the Melucha, stripped from him, that's because somehow he's done something fundamentally counter to the very idea of Melucha. Ari raises that issue in an indirect way by pointing out that where things go wrong for Shaul, we'll have to get into this next time in detail, where things go wrong is in Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Tet. Let's take a look. At Perek Yudal Pasuk Tet, Perek Tefav Pasuk Tet. For the moment, we'll end with this. Vayachmol Shaul v'ha'am al Hagag. Parenthetical comment. Shaul says later on in Pasuk Kaf Dalet when he confesses, quote unquote, Vayomer Shaul Shmo Chatati Ki Avarti Et Pi Hashem Ve'Et Dvarecha Ki Yareti Et Ha'am Ve'Eshma B'Kolam. In other words, Shaul says it was all the people's idea of Eshma B'Kolam. But when you look at where things go wrong in Perek Tadvav, Pasuk Tet, Vayachmol Shaul V'Am Alagag. Now, many have pointed out that the Vayachmol is singular in its grammatical tense, and Shaul is placed first, which would seem to imply, according to Biblical Hebrew, that Shaul is the initiator of the Chemla here, right? So it seems, this is a parenthetical comment, it seems unfair to say that Shaul later on blames the people, Eshma B'Kolam, when he seems to be the initiator in Pasuk Tet, Vayachmol Shaul V'Am Alagag, Va'ometa Vatzon, Va'bakar, Va'mishnin, Va'alakramim, Va'alkola Tov. What's the ordering here? Agag? The good sheep, the fat sheep, and all the good stuff, right? But the king, hold on a second, the king Agag is placed first. So Ari's point is right. There seems to be something here about king versus king. In other words, it's Vayachmal Shaul on the king Agag. And there's actually three different kings in the parak, right? There's Agag, the king of Amalek. There's Shaul, the king of Israel. And there's also implicitly Melech Malchei Melachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this issue of who's the real king, or what do kings do vis-a-vis other kings, and what king they have to recognize, and all these other kinds of issues seems to be at play in some way in the Perek. So I agree. I'll raise it as a third issue. What does the Perek have to say about Melucha in general, and the king-king-king relationship that I just kind of sketched out? So to sum up, we have a lot of work to do in Perek Tevav, and next time we'll try to attack these three questions head on. One, the question of the severity of the Chet of Shaul and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's reaction. Two, the key idea of Shema B'Kol in the Perek, the fact that the term appears many times, and specifically the three of Shmiat Kol Hashem, Shmiat Kol Atzon U'Bakar, and Shmiat Kol Ha'am that we discussed. And three, in what sense is this Perek about what Melucha is all about, which it clearly has to be because Shaul loses the kingship for some sort of misunderstanding of Melucha. We will pick this up next time at this point.